the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn.
Well, hi there, and we're back with another podcast. It's taking me a while to get to this, and we had I actually recorded something about 5 days ago, and then we kind of rethought it because some of the material had gotten dated very fast. So the beauty of technology, we're back, and we can now do an updated podcast. And I am Jeff Munn, and I thank you for checking this out at sports360az.com. And, of course, this is the place where you get all kinds of updated local sports news and information, the Brad Sesmatch Show, just all kinds of great stuff here on this website. I wanted to talk about a couple of things, and I'm going to start first with something a little bit off the beaten path, but it kind of ties into March Madness because this has become Phoenix, Arizona, a pretty good spot for women's basketball. You've got a pro team in the Mercury that's won three WNBA championships in recent years. And you have a college program in Arizona State that has a number three seed, as we're recording this, going into the NCAA tournament. Second winningest coach in Pac-12 women's basketball. And Charlie Turner Thorne has just heard what she has done with this program. And it's easy for me to say this because I'm their play-by-play broadcaster. But her work from the time she arrived in Tempe in 1996 to now has just been phenomenal. Now, I say that, I bring this up, the subject of women's basketball, because of the recent news involving Diana Taurasi, the Mercury guard, who, of course, has been really the face of the WNBA, one of their signature players. And she made a decision a little over a month ago. She plays in the winter in Russia, and they have offered her an enormous amount of money to sit out the WNBA season. And she's going to take them up on it. And a lot of people have been very concerned about what kind of impact this will have for the WNBA, and if you really go out to a bigger picture, women's basketball in general. Okay, it's tough to not be able to look forward to seeing Diana Taurasi play this summer if you're a Mercury fan. But I actually think there's a silver lining to this, and I want to start by explaining why is this situation coming up. First of all, and if you don't follow women's basketball, I'm doing this for the benefit of those that may not follow the sport closely. Women's basketball in Europe is a big deal, and the players are treated very well because there's an awful lot of attention from the public, from the media, on basketball in general in Europe, and especially women's basketball. And when you consider the fact that a lot of these pro leagues in Europe have actually been around longer than the WNBA, it's obviously the reverse for the men's game. But in the women's side of things, the European leagues are a little bit more established, and they are very popular. And as a result, they can actually offer more money to players. A lot of players in the United States in women's basketball have no choice but to try to play year-round in order to make a living at playing basketball, which is obviously something they want to do for as long as possible. And it's gotten to the point, obviously, with the Taurasi situation where they've offered so much money to just sit. I don't blame her for doing it. If you're given an opportunity, especially at her age and with what she's accomplished in the game of basketball, to take some time off and get paid to do it, why not? I don't blame her a bit, and I haven't heard anybody connected with the Mercury or the WNBA who blames her at all for taking that opportunity. Now, how does it affect the WNBA? I think there is a silver lining in this respect. I have been doing women's college basketball on radio for the last 11 seasons, and there are a lot of really good women's basketball players at the college level, the D1 level, around the country. And I think that if this became a trend where the really top echelon stars, the Candace Parkers, the Diana Taurasis, the Sue Birds, for example, were to decide to start playing exclusively in Europe, I actually think it would open up more opportunities for really good college players that a lot of fans are familiar with. When I was at the Pac-12 tournament in Seattle, I saw a terrific point guard named Amber Orange with Stanford. And you'd like to see her be able to move on to the next level. Well, there might be some more opportunities if the really elite players opt to go to Europe. I don't think that Taurasi staying out of the WNBA this summer is a death knell for the league. Far from it. Remember now what the WNBA is really selling to the marketplace. Not only are they selling basketball, and they should, but they're also selling the opportunity to come experience an NBA-style event in an NBA arena, in most cases, for lower prices than you find at NBA games. They want to appeal to families with young kids, and there are families with young kids that attend those games. They are not as well attended as NBA games, so they don't have to be. The pay scale is lower than the NBA, and that's just part of the growth of women's basketball. The players that are playing today are the pioneers that the players 25, 30, 40 years from now look back on and say they paved the way for us. So I look at it and I think, okay, it's never fun to consider the prospect of one of the very best players in the world not playing in your league. But there are a lot of good women's college basketball players, and I don't buy the assertion that Diana Taurasi not playing this summer is going to be a massive detriment to the WNBA. Might set the Mercury back a little bit because, obviously, they're looking to repeat as WNBA champions. But again, I don't think it's something that, boy, this is the beginning of the end for the league. Far from it. I mean, the league is, you know, they've been around for 20 years. I think the league is in pretty good shape. All things considered, they have a network TV partner. They do fairly well in terms of attendance in most of their cities. They have settled into a good ownership situation. You know, originally when the league started, the concept was to have the NBA teams in those cities own and operate the WNBA franchises. And the league has gradually moved away from that. Now the majority of the teams are privately owned by outside owners. The Mercury are still owned by the Suns. The Silver Stars are still owned by the San Antonio Spurs. But that's more the exception than the rule now. And the league seems to be doing just fine. Admittedly, it's not going to get anytime soon to the level in terms of interest, acceptance, and money that the NBA is at. But still, it seems to be doing okay. And I think it'll be just fine. Even if we don't see Diana Taurasi in a WNBA game again. I think we will, and she's pledged to come back in 2016. But again, if she said, I've had a change of heart, and I really am ready to just kind of scale back my schedule, who could blame her? For what she's given this franchise and what she's given the league, I think she doesn't owe a thing further than that to the WNBA or to the Phoenix Mercury. Certainly, if she comes back, everybody will be very glad to have her back. But does she have to come back? Not in my view, no. And I think the league will be just fine. All right, let's go on to some other things. And I wanted to talk a little bit about baseball's initiatives to quicken the pace of play. A lot of times, I don't get that wrapped up in how long a game is. Because once a game starts, if you're really into a sport, you kind of lose track of how long a game is taking. I know on the times when I've done play-by-play of D-backs games, you just completely lose track of how long the game is going. You get so wrapped up in things that are happening within the game, and unless it's a blowout, if it's a 10-1 game, okay, you might notice that the game might be dragging a little bit. But if it's 4-4 in the ninth inning and you've been there for 3.5 hours, you really don't feel like it's been 3.5 hours. So I don't get as wrapped up in time of game as maybe some other people do. But I did notice the impact that one of the pace of play initiatives has on the game, and that's the batter stepping out of the batter's box. The way I noticed it was I've done some webcasts for the D-backs this spring, as I do each spring, and they have enforced the pace of play rules. There's a clock in center field that counts down the time between innings. And they have really enforced this batter stepping out after every pitch rule. A couple days after the last webcast I did, I went to ASU to watch them play Oregon State on a Saturday night at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. College baseball does not have these rules in effect. They don't have as much time between innings. Now, that should be noted. But I watched batters step out regularly out of the box, and I started to make me realize that, yeah, stepping out of the batter's box does pose a problem in terms of the pace of play. And I applaud Major League Baseball for being very judicious in how they're going about tightening up the pace of play. But again, the way I look at it is this. Once you're at a game, time invested, does it really seem like it's that much of an issue? I think it's more of an issue for those watching on television, and as the revenues from television continue to increase, certainly Major League Baseball has to respond to that. But being at the ballpark, to me, first of all, you have the flexibility to get up and leave if you need to go home and go to bed and get ready for work the next day. I know that it's in this culture of instant gratification, a lot of people want things quicker, but, and maybe it's my age, but I just don't notice that a game is dragging until it's a completely out of hand kind of contest, like 12-1. But if it's a 5-4 game in the eighth inning and I look up at the clock and it's 10 o'clock, it doesn't bother me that much because the game is good. And I think that's the bigger issue with pace of play. Very few people complain about a 3.5-hour football game if the game's good. If the game's bad, if it's 35-0, yeah, they can't wait for it to be over. That's usually the biggest determinant in how people feel about the pace of a game is how good is the game. A 2-1 baseball game might take 3 hours and 20 minutes, but you won't find as many people upset about it because the game is competitive, it's fun, it's compelling, it holds your interest. At the same time, I am all in favor of getting back to a day where the normal time of game for a Major League Baseball game is roughly about 2.5 hours. It's going to be tough to achieve because baseball, like every other sport, has to incorporate television and they have to take care of their TV partners by allowing them enough time to play commercials. It's always been kind of fascinating to me that you have to set a certain amount of time for commercials. I often wondered if it would be plausible or possible to reduce the amount of commercials that are played in a game, but raise the amount of money you charge for those commercials that would make it basically offset the money you would lose by cutting down the amount of commercial time. But it hasn't been done, so I assume that isn't realistic. Even still, there are ways to tweak the game and get it to a point where it will be quicker. I'm not crazy about a pitch clock. I know it was implemented in the Fall League, and it seemed to go on without much complaint from the pitchers. But they have to do some things to speed the pace of play. And, you know, they've talked a lot about hitters stepping out of the box, but admittedly, the pitchers do just as much in terms of slowing the game down, stepping off the rubber, looking in for signs. And Steve Traxel is the guy that used to, when he pitched for the Mets and the Cubs, the guy that got the most angst drawn at him because he did pitch very slowly. And I asked Tom Candiotti, our D-backs radio analyst, one time, if everybody agrees that it's not good for the fielders to just stand around as much as they do when a guy like Traxel's pitching, why does Traxel pitch at that pace? And Candy explained, he said, he has to because that's where his comfort level is. If he tries to speed up, he won't be as effective. So I understand that. And that's part of, for me, one of the beauties of the game is that it can be played at different speeds and tempos. It doesn't emphasize that one size fits or it has to be the same size or one size fits all mentality that everybody has to do everything the same way. Everybody does not have to do everything the same way in baseball. And that's part of the beauty for me of the game itself. But I am in favor of Major League Baseball doing whatever they can to get the game back to a 2.5-hour window. Make it a 2.5-hour game on average. You can't do it with a 15-inning game, but how often does that happen? And I'm very anxious to see how baseball further tightens things up in terms of the clock. And it's not just because, well, I'm anxious to go home after a night on the air. I want this game to remain popular, and I do think that given all the news that we've heard about football and this week's news involving the 49ers defender who called it a career after 1 year, I do think that baseball very quietly can pick up some ground in terms of the national sporting conscience by just going about its business. I don't think that Greg Borland's retirement is going to be a death knell for the NFL or the beginning of the end, but I do think that it will kind of turn a few more people towards baseball. And if baseball can seize that opportunity, make the games go a little quicker, it can do nothing but help. Hey, it can do nothing but help you if you stay on this website because you'll get the latest information on a whole variety of topics And a lot of them are all local, about the teams you care about the most. So check out the columns, the stories. Check out Brad Sesmatch's show. If you just came to this podcast just because I'm on it, well, number one, you got to have a better reason than that. But secondly, check out all the other stuff on this website because it's chock full of good information and not just stuff slapped up on a screen. They are at events. They take videos. They take pictures. They do interviews with people. They get information and they pass it along to you. So I thank you for checking out this podcast. Baseball opening day is coming, but we'll keep chugging along with these podcasts, and I hope you'll catch up with us the next time we do a podcast, which I hope will be very soon. Thanks for checking us out, and I'll talk to you soon.